Hello there, and welcome back to Everything in Potteration, because sometimes the internet can be too much. My name is Colin Sparling, and I am hellbent on cooking the best chocolate chip cookie.
And I'm Robert, and this morning I just cooked a pasta al burro.
Ooh, that sounds good. I'm Daily, and this week I am making a Genoese sponge cake with fresh strawberries.
Ooh. So lots of baking going on the show. Not cooking.
Hell yeah.
So here's the thing. You can already tell, like, I'm the fucking intruder in this podcast. I said cooking cookies, okay? I said cooking. Well, I didn't say baking.
That's why they're called cookie. They call you cook them.
I'm just going to play it. Yeah. I'm just going to play it off What?
I'm going to be making my sponge cake in a skillet.
Yeah.
So, like flipping it, cooking, putting in the oil. No, but...
like the Christian rock band skillet?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was going to use a cast iron for my cookies next. Just fry them right on there.
You probably could.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to steam my next cookie. I'm going to get a double basket steamer and steam cookies. Little cookie dumplings.
Depending on the cookie, that sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to say, though, that I am, it's hilarious that I am hosting this particular episode, because I am by far the least qualified when it comes to cooking. So, but I'm going to do it anyway, because I like a lot of the people that we're going to talk about in this episode and a lot of the different cooking shows. And I've also been a cooking show fan for most of my life, and we'll get into that. But yeah, so today we're going to be talking about lots of cooking, specifically cooking YouTubers, and I'm sure you at home, whoever's listening to this, you have a cooking YouTuber that you like to watch. You may not attempt a lot of the recipes like me, I just watch them for entertainment mostly, but nonetheless, you have cooking YouTubers you like. Cooking YouTubers are an explosively huge thing. A lot of them have even spiked in numbers because of the pandemic. A lot of people are locked at home cooking themselves, so people have turned to cooking YouTubers to show them the ropes. But even before then, cooking YouTubers were explosively huge. What do you guys think that is?
Food unites us all.
I mean, everyone eats, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the...
I think part of it is, I mean, it's existed long before YouTube, right? Because Food Network, food like Rachel Ray and like Oliver, Jamie Oliver, Alton Brown, you know, they were on that old technology called television. I think is what they called it. Yeah, it had like things called channel, not like Slack channels, but like.
You're talking about TIV.
TIV.
Yeah, TIV.
Where, yeah, and so there were a lot of these cooking type shows, right, where you'd see these people just cook and allegedly teach you how to cook. Who knows how many people would follow through, Colin. but now, of course, that's the modern take on that. Well, the most modern take on that is TikTok, right? But the one that's been around for a good while now is YouTubers, cooking YouTubers.
Delicious, Daily. Delicious. I like to stare at, it is a visual. It is very much a visual medium, watching the sizzle, hearing the sizzle, watching various baking or cooking shows. I definitely watch more than I attempt. But there are definitely mediums like YouTube and Instagram and TikTok that make it way more easy to try new recipes just because you're seeing someone work through it. I cannot do just written out things anymore where it's like, and then you add this and then you add this and it'll be fine. I have to see it in order to be reassured that it will be fine and that I won't accidentally create, like, I don't know, a mess.
So yeah, I mean, I think that pretty much sums it up. Everybody eats, everyone likes food, everything likes things that look pretty. So I think cooking shows are a pretty obvious thing. And I actually, while Daily was talking, I looked up, like, what was the first cooking show ever? And actually, this name will sound familiar. The Betty Crocker Cooking Show of the Air. It was a radio show in 1924 in the United States.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's some old school YouTube.
It's like you were going all the way back to the radio. We're not even looking at all your pretty TikTok foods yet.
That's like podcasts before podcasts.
Whoa.
We've officially come full circle. Now we're just podcasting about food again. Should we start a cooking show that's a podcast?
Mm-hmm. We'll call it the Betty Crocker Show. Wait.
Wait. The Credy Bacher.
Credy Bacher. Welcome back Credy to Credy Bacher.
So did TM. I had no idea that, like, so there was a cooking show, but then the brand, the Betty Crocker brand that you can get with, like, instant baked goods and things like that, I didn't know that was, like, I didn't know that's where that came from.
Betty was a woman. Betty was a real woman.
Mm-hmm. What? She is that true?
I didn't.
I figure that Betty was a real woman and that they weren't just like, I don't know, let's say that Betty made this cookie.
They just
she sounds nice.
Oh, wait, actually, in this blurb, it does say, according to Wikipedia, that Betty Crocker is a fictional character.
Hey, it's like Aunt Jemima.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Well, maybe that's for the best in some ways. But now
you guys want some
about...
Uncle Ben's rice with that, too?
No, I'd rather have Uncle Roger's fried rice.
Oh, yes.
Uncle
yes.
Roger. We'll get into
I've been
that.
Watching him. I dig him a lot. Highly recommend.
I mean, much like you guys, I mean, I was... Even before YouTube, like cooking shows, I would race all the way home and turn on 3:30. Guy's Big Bite. Let's go, baby. Guy
like
Fieri.
Mr. Fieri?
Yes. His cooking show on the Food Network. It was like my favorite thing, and everything he would make looked insanely good. And I will never forget it because he had a fridge with fucking hot rod flames on it, because of course he did.
Well, it's to make the fridge go faster.
Of course, yeah. But, and then, you know, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives was his big show after that. I think that was after that. But Guy Fieri actually got big because of Food Network's, like, cooking contest. It was basically American Idol, but for celebrity chefs. Mm. And that's how Guy became a thing, because before that, all we had was, like, Rachel Ray. Who was Bobby Flay? Remember him?
No.
Who says Bam?
Emeril, yes, how could I forget Emeril? And all those people. And I remember if I got home too early, Barefoot Contessa was on, and nobody wanted to watch fucking Barefoot Contessa. Come on.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here, Barefoot Contessa.
There is perhaps a sliver of the population that made a discovery about themselves by watching the Barefoot Contessa, just because the barefoot part.
It awoke something in them.
It awoke.
I still don't understand, like, why that name? Why was it called Barefoot Contessa? It puzzles me to this day.
Well, she cooked with her feet, right?
Yep.
That's what I watched.
Yeah, okay.
Am I watching the wrong thing?
Nope. Horny on Main. Gotta stop the show.
Wait, bear the animal or bear, like, naked?
Oh, no, like, she's B-A-R-E. Part bear. She lives up in Alaska.
Or wears, like, bear slippers.
Bears live. Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, she's really dexterous, even in those slippers. Mm-hmm. How far are we taking this?
How could I forget, guys? Paula Dean.
Oh, the butter lady.
that's one way to remember her by. There's other ways.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
might not be worth mentioning.
And, of course, I want to give a shout out to the late, great Anthony Bourdain. Didn't necessarily have a cooking show, but he did go around the world searching out different dishes, not necessarily related to what we're talking about with this particular podcast. But I love Anthony Bourdain, and he's getting a biopic or some sort of autobiography or documentary made about him.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
So actually, it's funny that you bring up people like Anthony Bourdain, because I think this is something that I wanted to have in this podcast, right? Is that I looked up a list of all the most subscribed food YouTubers out there, right? And I noticed none of them break the top 100 even. And Daily, when I told you that in the pre-show, you would mention, oh, that's kind of surprising because a lot of people like cooking, right?
Yeah. Not everyone's into gaming, but like everyone likes food.
Here's the thing. I would argue it's not that everyone likes cooking. It's that everyone likes eating. Because you need to survive.
Right.
So most of these cooking YouTubers we're talking about, I mean, like, you see Babish, like, try the food he makes at the end of it. But it's not like the whole point of the show is watch Andrew Ray eat a food. It's watch him make the food, right? And when you look at a lot of the really big gaming YouTubers, like, you see Markiplier and Jacksepticeye, like, between their videos of, like, oh my god, look at this thing I did in Minecraft or whatever, they do, like... Markiplier tries 5 foods or some shit, or Jacksepticeye eats the spiciest, you know, Korean ramen, right? It's like, for them, the eating part of it is feeding into pun intended, their big views as gaming YouTubers, which is like arguably the most popular thing on YouTube, right? But with these food cooking YouTubers, like, yes, they are growing for sure. Joshua Weissman shot up like fucking 2 or 3 million subs just because of the pandemic, right?
Yes.
And that's great for him, but it's like, I can see why they're not in the top 100, because I think what's more popular than cooking shows, at least with YouTube, is eating shows or mukbangs.
Like, we try this. Like, I literally watched Markiplier eat every flavor of Pop-Tart. And yeah. I was angry at him the whole time because he doesn't like Pop-Tarts, but he had so many Pop-Tarts, and I have no Pop-Tarts.
But yeah, I mean, that's why Anthony Bourdain, I think, like, he is legendary, right? Like, people know that name, but he's not legendary for a cooking show. He's legendary for an eating show.
We're traveling too, but...
Right, but like...
You watch him go places to eat things.
Yes.
Right, he doesn't cook the things there. And I think that same energy, that same superstar energy behind a popular eating show is something that we're seeing translated and channeled into the YouTube landscape, and that a lot of the big names are getting popular because they eat ridiculous things.
Well, I feel like a lot of it, though, is like they were already big, but then also on the side, they're eating a lot of things, you know, because people that got big based off of just kind of eating crazy things like that, then I think of like LA Beast,
right?
And people like that.
That's fair. I mean, I think it's more that they're like, these big names are channeling that energy, right? Because at that point it's like, I want to see Good Mythical Morning eat mint ice cream or mint wings or whatever, right? Like, I just want to see them do that.
It's easy content. It's going to always be at least relatable on the human level that we all eat.
Right.
And you're like, ooh, I want to see your reaction to like, how are mint chicken wings good? Let's find out.
Yeah. And honestly, actually, Robert, what I thought you were going to go with your point was pointing out that like, people are super interested in eating, not necessarily cooking. Whereas like, for instance, streamers or like gaming commentators, whatever you want to call them, they play the games, but there's not a whole lot of YouTubers out there that are huge that are making games, as I thought we were going to take it, which I think is, I don't know, kind of interesting in and of itself, but
relevant. I think there it's a little different in that, like, with making a game, I mean, no offense to all the game developers out there, because I know they're all very, like, hard workers and probably overworked, most of them. But there are long hours of the game development process that are boring to watch because it's just you sitting at your computer typing out code, or like you're sketching out something. And it takes you like an hour to or more to create this really beautiful concept art.
A lot and of repetition.
I'm sure some people would find value, especially in watching like concept artists draw stuff out, right? But it's not as, there's not as much visual flair as like, first I'm going to chop the onions, then I'm going to saute them, and then I'm going to, you know, play with the fire a little bit and like use the oil to like... big fire, you know, like there's just literally more flair to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't know. And plus, it's, I feel like food in general is just a little less niche than game dev and then video games in general, because, you know, food is food is food. But I do want to, of course, we've kind of alluded to it a little bit already, but I do want to get into talking about some of the bigger YouTubers in the cooking scene and why we think they get views and why we think they're so popular. Obviously, some of the bigger ones we have, like Binging with Babish, Joshua Weissman, like Robert mentioned, has been blowing up like crazy, especially since the pandemic. Yusuke Cooking has been going for a long time. And then you have some like, I guess, older media cooks kind of transitioning into the YouTube space, like Alton Brown and Gordon Ramsay. Gordon Ramsay, I mean, is 17.7 million subscribers. For context, Binging with Babish, in comparison, has 9 million subscribers. And I was actually, like, saying before the show, I was like, holy shit. Like, I always knew Gordon Ramsay. He's, like, insanely popular. Still has, like, a network television show. I mean, he has a show on Disney Plus now for National Geographic. I mean, he's just insanely popular still. But, like, I mean, God damn.
It takes a special kind of charisma to become popular for putting two slices of bread around someone's face and calling them an idiot sandwich, right? Like, I mean, you two are giggling because it's funny, right? But it's like, imagine if like someone who's way less popular did that, that'd be kind of like, why the fuck are you holding bread up to that person's face? What are you doing?
Yeah. He definitely the thing with Gordon Ramsay, that he's not just known as being an asshole, but he's known as being like someone that gets frustrated with people that should know better, as opposed to like amateur cooks like children. The reason why he had that whole show with like the children cooking was because he wasn't about to shout abuse at children who don't know any better. Mm-hmm. But when he has professional chefs or restaurant owners on like Kitchen Nightmares, it's like, you should know better. You know that you're fucking up. You're going to get his wrath, his very British wrath.
British bready wrath.
It's fucking raw. Mm-hmm. The squid is so raw that it's still telling Patrick to fuck off.
Got him.
There, I love that. So many jokes.
Jokes. Yeah. I love it. I love you, Gordon Ramsay. No, but yeah, Gordon Ramsay like is just someone who like, you know, he made that transition into the YouTube space gloriously, right? Like, he leaned into the whole idea of being a meme. He's just someone who knows how to brand himself.
He's on TikTok. He gets the Zoomers. I don't know how to work TikTok, guys. I'm very millennial in that sense. But he does like the stitching where it's like, Gordon, watch this. Here's how I make scrambled eggs. And then he reacts and is like, that's terrible. Or like, oh, that actually, you're doing that right. And then you did this wrong. In his very Gordon Ramsay style.
Look at him. But he's not the biggest cooking YouTuber, though. 17.7 million is still pretty good. But the biggest channel I've seen so far is Tasty, actually.
Oh, BuzzFeed Foods, right?
20.4 million.
God damn.
I would credit that a lot with Facebook. They kind of pioneered those like the quick cook videos where it's just the overhead shot of the pot or whatever. And that's what I would even venture to blame the video bubble when it was like on Facebook. It's like, making videos on Facebook is where the money is, guys. We got to do it. We got to make everything into videos, only video content. And then that didn't really work out.
Whoops.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's interesting, too, that something like Tasty in comparison to something like Binging with Babish, Gordon Ramsay, Joshua Weissman, Claire Saffitz, like, all of that stuff is very personality driven. A lot of person in front of the camera doing the thing, right? And they're usually like longer form videos, like 5-10 minutes, even longer, maybe to 20 to 30. Whereas Tasty is like very much that like, here's how to make, I don't know, chicken adobo in 30 seconds. You know?
Interesting. Because I think Tasty is kind of a more interesting tale than that, because I think they've evolved. I think originally...
I'm out of the loop, just to be fair. So
the way they became popular was those quick, like 30-second, 1-minute long, essentially GIFs, right?
Right.
GIF recipes.
Yeah, where all you need is like, there's just text on there. There's not even like a narrator for some of them, right? But today, if you go to Tasty's channel, there's a lot of like personalities behind it, because it's BuzzFeed, right? So you've got Alvin. He's like probably one of the bigger names behind it. But BuzzFeed also has About to Eat as another cooking subsidiary under them that has another like whole cast of personality driven cooking people, right?
Is that where
make a Why I Left BuzzFeed video?
Oh god, yeah. Is that where like Try Guys and stuff is hosted?
No, Try Guys is a totally separate thing. And that
Why I Left BuzzFeed.
Yeah. That falls more under the eating, not the cooking, I would say,
that's how out of the loop I am with the whole BuzzFeed thing.
Yeah, because Tasty has hosted quite a few like more personality driven stuff, and I think they're migrating most of it over to About to Eat. But yeah, they've evolved from that like quick 1-minute snippets, which was very popular back in the day, and in some cases kind of still is today. But like you were saying, Colin, today is all about personality driven people. I think, if I had to guess, I'm going to make armchair expert assumptions about you as a person, Colin. Yeah. The reason you watch these videos but don't cook the videos is because you like
I cook the videos. Just you don't take cook a USB the drive, throw it in the skillet. Just
You put it in an omelet.
Yeah.
But the reason you don't cook what these videos are saying is because you're more in it for the personality. Like, you like,
for sure,
watching Josh smack his ass and say, yeah, crispy.
Yeah, crispy, and Papa gonna be mad.
Yeah.
Crispy.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that, I think your assumption is completely right. I mean, I love watching Binging with Babish and staring at his forearms. It always delights me. Mm. And making him like hearing him make awkward commentary over things is
shout out to my favorite. Tanisha C on YouTube for calling out.
Hey, we're talking about Babish.
Listen, I'm just saying, Tanisha, there's conversations being had, and that's all I'll say about that. About the Babish fan cast is happening.
No,
very non-committal, but I'm saying there's conversations being had.
Yeah,
but yeah, Babish was definitely like the concept of like, I'm making this from this show or this movie, but I think that people stick around for the Babs himself.
Mm-hmm. For the awkward, tall, bald man.
Yes, and his forearms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so like likable, for the lack of a, you know what I'm saying? He's just so easygoing and relatable. I mean, I'm a little bit biased because Robert and I got the chance to see him on his book tour when he came through Seattle, which is pretty cool. It was like, what, two years ago?
Which was the first time he's been to Seattle, even though he has a Seattle skyline tattoo.
That's for Frasier.
Yeah, that's for Frasier.
You uncultured swine.
I know. But I just thought he would have taken a trip to Seattle first. I don't know.
We're just making Tanisha's argument for her because we already know so much about Babish's forearms that...
Yeah, he was born on... No.
Let's write his biography.
But and then Babish is great. And then, I mean, Josh, someone who worked in the restaurant industry, like branched out, does YouTube full time now. Super relatable, makes a lot of meme-y stuff. Also likes to do his thing where he flexes a shitload and is like, does stuff that like literally no one who's a home cook is probably going to do. Mm-hmm. But that's why you like him. The list goes on. I mean, Claire Saffitz, not even getting to the whole Bon Appetit thing yet, but like Claire is great. Always loved Claire. Gourmet Makes was like where I fell in love with her content and Brad Leone and whatnot. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dale, you had a question about You Suck at Cooking, if I remember right.
I have not heard of You Suck at Cooking unless someone was telling it that to my face.
Do you hear that often?
Less now.
Good. All before. The cooking YouTube has helped.
I've improved.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, You Suck at Cooking, they're sitting at, what is that, 2.63 million subs. They're pretty great. It started out as a joke comedy kind of channel with cooking, and I think it's actually a good look at that. You know, we're saying that personality driven is a really big part of cooking, but I would also say now, like, if you wanted to make a cooking YouTube channel today, you need almost a gimmick on top of your personality. And You Suck at Cooking's gimmick, it started out as like very lazy, quick, easy recipes, but also very good comedy and good editing. So like, when he says, you know, okay, now you need a bunch of cherry tomatoes, he gets a big tomato, throws it at the wall, and then at the moment of impact, it turns into a bunch of cherry tomatoes because of video editing.
Ooh. Right? Ooh.
Yeah, and it's just silly stuff. Like, I wouldn't recommend watching his videos to learn how to cook. It's more just like cooking humor, cooking comedy.
Entertainment.
Yeah, and he has, you know, he calls like, anything that you stir something with, he calls it a wang jangler, and you use it to wang jangle whatever's in your bowl.
Yeah.
You throw stuff in the undo at 450 fundo.
Ah.
That sort of thing.
I love it. Yeah. Okay. Like, I'm going to use wang jangle as a verb for everything now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's just an example of like, you know, he isn't Babish. He isn't Josh, right? He isn't Alton Brown even. Like, it's not, you wouldn't go to him to learn to cook, but you go to him because he stands out in a different way.
Fun. I dig it.
Yeah, You Suck at Cooking.
I'm going to start watching that.
Pretty damn entertaining. So have fun wasting your entire night watching You Suck at Cooking, because that's probably what'll happen.
Wasting, I think you mean enjoying. Wang jingling. What are you going to do with your evening? I'm going to wang jingle.
Wang jingle.
Excuse me, I'll be wang jangling over here.
That being said, I mean, we could talk all day about popular YouTubers who cook and cook various types of things. And I've obviously inspired a lot of people to cook a lot more at home, I think, especially during the pandemic, as we talked about before. I do want to.
I think you're about to move on right to the controversies part, but something I think is interesting to look at too with these subscriber numbers is how old media has adapted to this personality driven landscape. Because when you look at Food Network now, do you guys want to guess how many subscribers they have on YouTube? again, to Food Network. Yeah, the Food Network official YouTube
channel.
Food
Network itself.
And for context, Babish is 9 million. Gordon Ramsay, 17 million.
I'll say 7.2 million, that is.
I'm going to say 15 million.
Oh, man, you were both so close. It's 1.7.
Oh!
Wow, okay, so it's way lower.
It's just 1.7. Oh. I mean, not just. That's still a pretty big number, but... I mean, when a single bald man can surpass an entire Food Network that has the power of TV behind it, right? I think that speaks volumes about the type of content that's succeeding on YouTube versus TV, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of a weird phenomenon, right? Because I feel like in some cases it hasn't transitioned as well for certain TV networks, but there's certain shows that have, like when you think of like Stephen Colbert's stuff, right? Or like really late night in general. I feel like a lot of their, I mean, technically you could still argue that's personality driven content. So I think that's kind of an exception to the rule. But yeah, so the like network television in that sense, if they can, it seems like if they can conform to the whole personality driven gimmick, then they tend to do better. If it's just the network as a whole transitioning, not so much.
Yeah. Well, because I've noticed too with Food Insider, they weren't as big on YouTube until I would say the past year or so. Where I think they started doing more of the like clickbaity videos, like 50 foods you have to try before you die or whatever, or like 50 of the best foods in each state or something like that. But then they recently, I think midway through last year, did Food Wars, the US versus the UK, where they have someone in the US compare like what a Domino's pizza is like in the US versus a Domino's pizza in the UK.
They bite into something, their clothes fly off, right? Like the anime.
Just like the anime that ended in a train wreck. But yeah, so that was very personality driven. The American guy, Joe, and then the British guy, Henry, they're both very fun. Like you can tell they're getting more comfortable on camera, which means more jokes are coming out. And it's like, again, very personality driven. And the views on those videos are fucking nuts. And now Food Insider's at 3.4 million subs.
Good for them.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, and as another example of a old media transitioning, Bon Appetit, which I think is a good transition into the controversies, right? Because Bon Appetit is a food magazine, and then they started doing video.
Yes.
And take it away, Colin.
Yeah, so exactly. Just like Robert said, they were a magazine owned by Condé Nast, and they had transitioned into video, and they were doing explosively well. Their content was blowing the hell up. They had series like Gourmet Makes with Claire, It's Alive with Brad Leone, which has some of the best editing work I've ever seen. And Brad is just, he's every editor's dream. He's so good.
I would say nightmare, but the editor was so good that he made it work.
He's
that,
chaos, man.
fair point. He is very much chaos, and the editor turned it around into something very special, and I still have a very special place in my heart for Brad. Love Brad. Hey, Vincenzo! Oh, never forget that. But yeah, so basically with Bon Appetit, they ran into a lot of controversy. Was about a year ago now?
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I would put it almost a year. 7 months ago was when they had their big comeback after the controversy, which started with Sola, who was on a lot of the videos, and she was in the background of like Claire's videos. She was on that series where they had all the professional chefs doing like various things. I didn't watch that series near as much, in the test kitchen. And she posted on her Instagram basically being like, hey, I haven't been paid for like a lot of things, and I'm being paid significantly less than my white coworkers. And this is the way it is at this company, is that if you're not white, you're not getting paid as much, which is some shit, because they contribute so much to the test kitchen, not only in the videos themselves, but like the whole ideas and concepts and various foods. It's not it's very sad to have heard that was the way that it was actually working behind the scenes.
Yeah, and so it turned into a lot of different just experiences that a lot of people that worked there were talking about, like dishes being like essentially whitewashed, right? And like people that were even of that ethnicity not being the ones to cook said dishes, even though it would have made it a ton more sense in that context because they know those dishes really well. Stuff with like upper management. Wasn't there something with upper management like having a history of like blackface or something like that too?
Yeah, Mr. Rappaport. There was a photo that surfaced of him. I think it was his college days of him going to a Halloween party in blackface, because that's funny.
Yeah,
it's not funny.
No, it's not.
It's super not. Not even back then. If you can say it was a different time, but like that doesn't make it funnier.
It's not. Yeah. And he eventually stepped down along with the whoever was in charge of video, I believe. And that was after Sola and a ton of other people left. And Sola is now over at Babish's network that he's been starting up.
Yeah.
The Babish Culinary Universe.
Yes, the Babish.
It's a universe.
She was essentially poached by Babby, which is great because she's getting a lot of like, it's, there's a lot of Sola content coming out of there and it's doing really well. And she does a hell of a job. She makes a lot of great content over there. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that she gets to flex her muscles a ton more over at Babish's side of things.
Yeah, and it's nuts too, because like it's not even just the video side of it, right? Like even the writing side of Bon Appetit and kind of Condé Nast in general. I mean, Vogue has had a history of like elitism and all that. But yeah, even with the
who
writing,
would have known Vogue would have elitism problems?
I know, right? And now they've got a cover story of Billie Eilish. Well, that was I guess a little while ago. But no, with Bon Appetit the magazine, there was a lot of like, okay, cool. This is a really cool, like, let's say Chinese dumpling recipe. That's awesome. How can we change it so that way a white tongue can like it? Was the kind of vibe. And like, how can we make sure that a white person can make it just as well? Instead of just taking the recipe at face value because it's an inherently, let's say, Chinese recipe, right? If you're talking about Chinese dumplings and you should try to make it authentically, et cetera, et cetera. There was none of that because authentic Asian recipes aren't as good as the white version of it was the
Let's
idea.
Make soup dumplings with Campbell's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the only maybe even somewhat argument you can make there would be like some of these ingredients are like super obscure in a given recipe to the point where like they're only accessible to like a very small amount of people, maybe you're like way more urban areas or something like that. But even then, it's like I that would have to be a very small amount of cases, and I can't imagine that's what happened in every one of these cases.
Yeah, and then you also have to consider too, like, it's not like the ingredients in that recipe were obscure in China. Like, if you're trying to make a Sichuanese cuisine recipe, the ingredients are probably fairly easy to find in Sichuan, the region of China where it comes from.
Sure.
Like no one would cook a daily recipe, not a recipe by daily, but a recipe you would make every day.
Hello.
With obscure ingredients, right? That's
right.
I mean, that's not a way to live.
Right.
I live my life that way. Right. I only use black truffles on my toast, which is only found in a certain area of the Himalayas.
Mm-hmm. And the toast itself is made of black truffles too, right?
What is it?
Black truffles.
Is a Joshua Weissman video? Damn.
Got truffles black on truffle everything. Truffle oil everything. but yeah, so Bon Appetit, they totally listened. They wrote an op-ed and was like, "We've heard what you've said. We're sorry.
We're sorry.
And we're going to try to be better in the future. And here's our relaunch video with Dawn. She's a black woman. She's gonna do more diverse cooking. We've got more diverse people. Here's our relaunch video that the comments were very bravely turned on for, and it is a it's a shit show, guys. Would you believe it?
No, I don't.
The top comment on that video, if you want to get a vibe for it, was like, wow, they're trying really hard to make this seem authentic and non-scripted. It's basically they came back and everyone was like, you're pandering really hard by just having three people of color in front of a camera being like, I love Bon Appetit.
Yeah, you completely just overcorrected.
None of the people that were already, you know, part of Bon Appetit from before were featured in that. It was just like, scrub everything, let's start over.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's still some folks who were previously with Bon Appetit that are still there, right, making videos. I think Bradley Yoni still makes videos there.
Brad's probably the biggest one from before, and then oh my gosh, I'm forgetting names.
Well, Claire left.
Claire's doing her own thing now, which is great. I mean, to be like, I don't know, man. Even with that whole controversy, if you're there, like, I mean, that's got to leave a really bad taste in your mouth. I mean, that whole situation, like, it's got to be a really toxic, awkward work environment. And so, like, I totally understand how, like, why people left. And I'm really curious, like, for the people that stayed, like, what convinced them to stay. I don't know if it was like a pay thing or what have you. But I don't know. I mean, because sorry, I hit my mic. I feel like Brad, I mean, of all people, could easily stand on his own if he went and did his own thing. You know,
he's got a book coming out. He's got a cookbook coming out.
Good for him. It's called Pickle This.
Is it?
I don't know.
I don't know. Really?
I mean, I could totally see that.
Pickle
ferment
this
that
with Brad Leone.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, and it is a shame, right? Because with Bon Appetit, it wasn't just the racism that was bad. There was also just generally the workplace was very toxic.
Right.
Like superior, like it felt like if you just joined the team, you couldn't talk to superiors or pitch ideas to them. It was more like you take their ideas and run with it. Which that kind of sucks. And then doubly so if you're a minority, right? Because then you have to deal with the racism as well. And that's just great. I don't know. I think probably one of my favorite things to come out of it in terms of just like how weird and crazy it all is a lot of this stuff came out of Reply All, like their reporting.
That's right.
Yes.
Right? Of Bon Appetit's work culture. And they couldn't finish the podcast series investigation about it because midway through, people at Reply All spoke up and were like, hey, that's like our toxic work culture too.
Oh, fuck.
So now Reply All has been on hiatus for a good while.
I was wondering why I wasn't getting updates.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, I think it's great that it's a chain reaction, right? Of once you see some people speaking up for how terrible their work conditions are, others do it too. It's maybe a little unfortunate that it happened at the company that was uncovering, you know, the toxicity. But
there's some lack of self-awareness there. If it's like, guys, we need to talk about how awful Bon Appetit is. And it's like,
yeah.
Look in the mirror.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's still good, right? But it's definitely I think it's definitely a wake-up sign for like cooking on YouTube in that you have to be very careful when you're coming from old media to new.
Yeah, man. I mean it sounds like most of the people though that I mean have moved past it now that are going to move past it and are doing better for themselves. I think most of anybody at Bon Appetit could be successful in their own right. I mean, they're all very talented people. So hopefully, you know, they were able to move on from that and find some sort of reprieve because all that is just incredibly shitty. I mean, it's terrible. Is it really that surprising that an elite kitchen in the middle of New York City that's probably hyper competitive was like that? Man, maybe not. But
yeah,
like,
it feels especially like insidious because deciduous. Yes. It feels like when leaves come off at fall. No, it feels especially shitty because part of the appeal of like the shows in the test kitchen was that like, oh, like you're like, hey, what's up, Mark? Can you help me with this real quick? Like, very buddy buddy. Everyone's friends. Hey, Sola, taste this real quick. Gabby, what are you doing? What's up? And to know that behind the scenes things were very different. That sucks. That's the downfall of basing things on personality, because if you find out that personality is fake, you're fucked.
Yep. I mean, that's pretty much the long short of it. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I didn't watch all of Bon Appetit's content. I'm only mostly familiar with like Brad and Claire's content at the time. And what's nice is that from what I remember, I don't remember their content being very like whitewashy as opposed to like what the rest of the Bon Appetit magazine has done, right?
Mm.
Because I mean, Claire's whole shtick was let's take a popular snack and make it, right? But where I think whitewashing does kind of come in is Uncle Roger, good old Nigel Ng. He on YouTube, right? He's Uncle Roger.
And his nephew, Nigel.
Nigel's uncle, Uncle Roger, who steals his YouTube channel sometimes, got really popular over that fried rice video where Uncle Roger reacted contentiously, let's say, to fried rice, how it was being made by, I don't even remember, was it like a BBC?
It was BBC. I forget the woman's name.
Something Patel.
He met her eventually. He actually like went on and did a little segment with her.
Yeah, she did like an apology tour with him. But yeah,
sorry for my fried rice.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I know this because I grew up making fried rice, but like when I watched that video, I was like, God damn, that is, who the fuck does that to their fried, who puts the fried rice through a colander after it's cooked? What are you doing, right? Like,
she rinsed the rice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like, I got it. And I think it's interesting that this character, right? Because Uncle Roger's a character. He's not real, fun fact. Did shine a light and went viral for it by shining a light on this kind of whitewashing of Asian recipes. Even something as simple as fried rice, you know?
Yeah. There was like a Jamie Oliver making fried rice, and he was like, and here's, you got to get out the chili jelly and like all sorts of like off the wall stuff. And he was like, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, come on. Like of all the quote unquote weird Asian food out there that white people might not like, fried rice is super not one of them.
It's available like. And anywhere you can get fried rice, literally anywhere.
It's pretty standardized at this point.
Yeah. But so I don't know. I think it's interesting that cooking YouTube has done that, you know, just shining a light on that sort of thing.
I agree too. And the Uncle Roger thing is kind of weird too, because I remember, I think the first time when that initial fried rice video had gone viral, like I had watched it and I actually like, I found it kind of funny, but then like, I think Robert, I watched it again with you and you're like, I don't know, man, this is kind of cringy. And I was like, you know, like maybe it kind of is, because like Uncle Roger is a character, right? But he's also like leaning really hard into like, you know,
Asian stereotypes.
You're right. Exactly.
Caricature.
Right. So I was like, I don't know. Like I feel very conflicted watching this because of that. And that way, I mean, at the same time, I mean, like you said, he is calling out a lot of like whitewashing and stuff, and he's very bold faced about it, which I kind of appreciate. Like, he's like, you know, I'm going to call you out. You know, we can be friends still, but I'm going to call you out and like tell you why this is wrong.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to like the whole Asian caricature thing, I think it's just it's a worry of what other people are finding funny in the show. If they think it's funny because like, haha, funny Asian guy. Maybe a little bit worrisome, because that implies you find Asian caricatures very funny. Yeah. But I will say, at least his criticisms of fried rice, like, I mean, they're pretty well-founded. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in that video, in the original BBC video, that I'm just like, I can't believe so many British people are learning fried rice this way. That is so sad.
Yeah, and to be fair, it like, I don't speak for all white people, but white people do some outrageous shit, okay? They do.
If anything, it was the way that in the cooking videos that he comments on, everyone is speaking with such confidence, like, this is what you do, this is how it's done, when they are in fact doing it in a pretty strange way, for those familiar.
Yeah, well, and also I should say, like, I don't know if it'd be a disclaimer or what have you, but I actually, the woman in the video for that original BBC video, I don't even think she's actually white, to be fair.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah. She looked like, I don't know what she is, but she was like darker skinned.
I mean, I would assume Indian by way of the UK based on her last name.
That's what I gathered. But, so I just kind of wanted to disclaim that too. But like, I guess then in that case, would it still be whitewashing? I don't really know. Like, I mean, it's definitely like not doing it right. Right. Like not doing it in the correct sense. So, I don't know. Is whitewashing even the correct term there? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah. But anyway, So I also, we also have cooking hacks to talk about. Robert, I know this is something you especially wanted to talk about.
Cooking hacks.
Yeah. With an X.
Hacks. So this was, I want to say a year or two ago now, that this YouTube channel called How to Cook That, which is run by a food scientist named Anne Reardon. She did this pretty long video kind of exposing a lot of other YouTube channels for really bad, awful cooking hacks. And it's not just like these cooking hacks don't work, but more like these cooking hacks could get you in the hospital kind of vibes.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yikes.
Yeah. So these channels called So Yummy and 5 Minute Crafts do things.
5 Minute Crafts. 5 Minute Crafts.
Fucking 5 Minute Crafts. So here's an example, right? Is so you take a hand mixer, put the whisk attachment on it, right? So then when you spin it, it spins the whisk very fast, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you want to make a cute little wispy like nest made of caramel, right, to like place on top of a cake or something,
mm-hmm.
So you just make the whisk go vroom, 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 and then you start pouring molten hot caramel on top of the whisk, and then it'll attach to the whisk and spin on the whisk, and then as it cools, it'll cool into a very nice little nest of caramel deliciousness.
The theory that it like makes basically like cotton candy, like it's,
yeah,
stringy like that,
right? Molten caramel is hot. It do burn. And when you pour it onto a whisk, it's not gonna stick to the whisk. It's gonna fucking fling around like, yes, off the whisk. And when hot caramel touches body, it hurt.
What? So this cooking hack is gonna get me third degree burns, is what you're telling me?
Yes.
Yikes. Big yikes.
So how did you get all these, you know, just molten hot caramel?
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to top my cake. I already made it. I just wanted to put something fancy on the top.
You know, I like, is there any like glorious story from like, more than likely you get a lot of burns and stuff in the kitchen, because that's just when you're dealing with hot stuff the most often. Like, I have a scar to this day on my right hand from baking peanut butter cookies.
Nice.
Because I just so happened to hit the rack when I was putting the goddamn tray in the oven.
Yeah, this cut,
worth it.
Nom. This burn, peanut butter cookies.
And my girlfriend,
traumatic events.
Every time I'm with my girlfriend, she's like, ah, there's your peanut butter cookie burn. I'm like, yep. Nice. Yep.
You should get a tattoo of that, just like a circle around the scar and then like text point
peanut
at it.
Butter cookie burn.
Peanut butter, yeah. Did this.
Yeah, it's, I think what is interesting to me about these quick cooking hacks, right, is that it's kind of the, I don't know if there's an internet rule for this or even just like a life rule, but it's a rule I do firmly believe that if there's a good version of something, there are enough shitty people in the world to eventually make the bad version of it and profit off of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is that. These are old school tasty videos, right? Like quick 1 minute, 2 minute, how to make this or that.
Mm-hmm.
Corrupted into awful cooking hacks that often don't work and in some cases can actually hurt you. And I guess part of me wants to say PSA,
don't do those.
Learn how to cook better from better sources than that, because if it looks too gimmicky and feels too gimmicky to be true, it's probably too gimmicky to be true. Occam's razor, right? So I guess keep an eye out for those sort of things. And I do think it's interesting just how shitty it is. It's kind of like with gaming YouTubers, how there's like kind of a whole host of really bad, low quality, arguably immoral gaming content out there too, just to catch on to the gaming train, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. If anyone asks you to put a knife on any kind of power tool, consider not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of veers into like, I mean, to me also, there's bad cooking hacks where they could hurt you, but then there's also, excuse me, there's also the whole genre of like, just making ridiculous foods that look disgusting for the sake of views.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an entirely too popular of a genre to me now. I hate it.
Do you
so
mean
much.
The entire How to Basic YouTube channel? Is that what you're talking
well,
about?
Well, How to Basic is like,
he's purposefully and clearly doing it for the sake of comedy, or she, whoever it was.
The world may never know.
Whereas with the, like, just disgusting cooking, like for instance, the video we talked about maybe a few episodes ago now, where the lady was, like, making the nachos in a cone thing, where she was, like, pouring all the shit onto the counter directly and, like, scooping it together
counter nachos.
Yes, yeah. Yes, like scooping it together with a fucking paint scraper like it was rolled ice cream and then putting it into a fucking nacho cone.
Or that person making a sweets casserole on a toilet.
Thank you. Yeah, I was about to say, is that the same person? Because that was a viral TikTok where it was like, okay, you fill the toilet with ice. I don't know if you clean it first. Whatever. Regardless, you fill it with ice and then you dump two things of ice cream in it and then you dump three things of candy in it and then you put the Kool-Aid in and then you serve it to unsuspecting guests.
Mm-hmm. Gross.
Delicious.
I mean, it's stuff like that where it's like, this is so impossibly ridiculous that, like, this has to only be done for views and clout, right? They're like, there's no other reason why that content exists other than, like, I want to get views on this and get ad rev or whatever it is. And, like, not even, I don't want to get too deep into the whole, like, TikTok foods or whatever, but, like, even that, like, some ridiculous stuff is seeped into, like, the TikTok cooking scene. And just recently, actually, Josh Weissman, he collabed with Cody Ko, I believe the YouTuber's name is, and they just recreated like 10 different foods from TikTok or something like that. And it was like ridiculous shit, like melting nacho cheese together with marshmallows, like in the microwave. Yeah, like the canned cheap nacho cheese that's like yellow and you would get it out of like a ball game or something. Like,
why though?
Yeah, or like somebody took just a bowl of Frosted Flakes and just for some reason put sliced Kobe Jack cheese on the top. No reason.
Mm-hmm. Why no though?
Reason. The texture.
Yeah. Or I like the one that's a little bit more believable for me, but like the whole thing with like peanut butter and then pickles.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's fringe flavors where it's like, oh, this combination actually tastes good. You'll never believe it. And then there's just shit people do to waste food.
Yeah.
For video sake.
I mean, there's exactly only one TikTok recipe I've seen come out that has looked decent. And it's that pasta with like the cherry tomatoes and like the olive oil. And I forget what the name of it is, but it just seems like a pretty decently made like tossed pasta. So I'll take that, but
all right.
Yeah, it didn't seem it, like the gimmick for it was that it's so easy anyone could do it, and I guess that's harking back to old school tasty in a way.
Mm.
Yeah, so I don't know, that stuff just bothers me, and it's some sort of just gross. And also would like to give a shout out to anything where it's like a video where someone's just making mass quantities of any given food, like ridiculously big tacos or just like a mass vat of something.
Oh, like,
ooh,
like
Healthy Kitchen. Hell, it's spelled hell. Feed Kitchen is a YouTube channel where they just make big versions of things, like a giant, you know, like 3 foot long chicken nugget. That's actually a chicken nugget, stuff like that.
That was
fun stuff.
That's basically just a new take on a fucking Epic Mealtime. You guys remember Epic Mealtime? Oh, we didn't even mention that.
Yeah, they're the OG cooking YouTubers. Dude.
More bacon.
Oh man, what happened
more
to that?
Bacon strips. They all had heart attacks.
Yeah. No. I mean, I know Harley at the end of all that was getting more into gaming stuff, but don't really know how well that transition turned out.
Yeah, I don't think he's doing too much now, but yeah, I mean, but the whole big food thing, there's something about food in big quantities to me that makes me physically ill.
But then why do you like watching those cooking YouTube or the Korean YouTube shows? Korean cooking shows?
I will sometimes it is like a little much. Like, it doesn't get me to the point where like I can't watch this, but it's kind of like if I watch too much of this, it would probably make me squeamish a little bit. Mm. But like, for instance, one of the ones that comes up on my feed a lot is the one where they make the garlic butter, like cream cheese bread loaf or whatever, where they slice it up and then they have like just a fucking massive vat of garlic butter and they just dip the whole thing in there and just like slather it, just cover it and get garlic
more
butter.
Yeah.
More.
And then bake it. And I'm just like, there's something disgusting about this amount of fucking butter.
No. And oil. I want it. I want it.
Ugh. But just caused my Paula arteries Dean's looking Wayne at it.
Jangling over that butter.
Butter.
Yeah, pro tip. If you haven't checked out the Korean cooking channels out there, Yummy Boy, ETTV, it's just...
They're fantastic.
I'm going to assume foreigners just filming like street food or like restaurants in Korea, just doing their thing. It's pretty, it's not quite ASMR, but it's the same vibe because there's like no talking. It's just the sound of like clang clang and sizzling and stuff.
Yeah, it's convinced me that when I do one day go to Korea that I'm going to return 20 pounds heavier because all the food just looks ridiculous over there. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I do get the sense that we're sort of starting to wind down, but I do want to say though that cooking YouTube, I think ultimately is a huge net positive because I think they've done it even with like the personality driven like content. It's like a double edged sword, but in a good way, right? Because it's you're getting entertainment and entertaining content on one side that's just for anyone, but the other side that they're going about it in a way that makes cooking look extremely accessible in a lot of cases,
except for Josh.
Except for, yeah, so we're going to make chocolate today, so pull out your chocolate maker, because everyone has one of those.
Mm-hmm. Relatable.
Yeah, always. But yeah, or like roasting your own coffee. Jesus, Josh, come on, bro. Love you, but geez. But I mean, stuff like binging with Babish, like all the recipes he does, like he does so many versions of them, and he makes them look super approachable. You can do them with household ingredients that are pretty common. And you don't need a whole lot of cookware to do it either. So I don't know. I think it's great that it's just encouraging more people to cook at home. Like it's to the point where like people that don't view a lot of this content, like who are maybe a little older, like I tell my parents like, hey, like Robert made this, or like I tried to make this, or like I watched a video about this, and they're like, well, you can make all that stuff. And it's like, yeah, like
I liked the hierarchy of that. Robert made this, I tried.
Yeah, because it's the fucking truth. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it, all right? I'm not gonna make myself look good, all right? Robert's a damn good cook. I'm not. Simple.
Yeah, it's true.
But I mean, it's like, yeah, like I tell my parents, they're like, wow, I can't believe you can make all that. I was like, yeah, it's really not that hard. I mean, you watch someone just lay out all the steps, you do the damn thing, you might not do it as well, but you keep trying, and next thing you know, you get pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, any closing thoughts on cooking YouTubers, you guys?
Yummy.
Good. Thank you. That's what I've been waiting for, the word yummy. No, I mean, I think it's, I agree, Colin, that I think cooking YouTubers are net positive as a thing on the platform.
Yeah.
Generally, so far, I think overall, the cooking YouTube community, I don't really know if it's a community because I feel like they don't collab as often as, say, like the gaming community.
Sure.
But as a pseudo community, I think it's more positive in general. Like I don't think we've ever had a heated gamer moment where Babish says the n-word while trying to whisk some eggs. Gamer word.
He just got really pissed off making pasta aglio e olio and just fucking let it fly.
Yeah, and so I mean, that's a win. When there's no racism involved, that's a win, I guess. But I will say too that if you are also a fan of cooking YouTubers or just cooking videos in general, but you don't cook that often, I recommend just trying it because, like, yeah, they make it seem not so hard and all that. And it really isn't that hard. You just got to put in a little bit of effort. And even, like, so if you're not familiar with cooking and you try cooking something, it's not going to be the best. Just flat out, right? Because your next time you do it is going to be better. And the one after that is going to be better and better. Like, even though I'm a pretty good cook, it's not like the first scrambled eggs I made were perfect, though. And not even today, my scrambled eggs aren't perfect. They're just going to get better, you know, but they are pretty good now.
Practice makes perfect.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I'm really, yeah, as far as accessibility goes, I think that the popularity of like cooking shows on YouTube has really rocketed up there in terms of like people just trying things out, trying new food, trying to make new flavors in their own kitchens. And figuring out like what food do you like? You're not constrained by what you have around you locally, like the McDonald's and the Arby's. Like you can make things in your own kitchen and try them out and figure out that, oh, I really like Ethiopian food. I never would have thought that. But then I tried making it. Try new things. Mm-hmm. You'll probably like new things.
And yeah. And pro tip, once you learn how to cook, you can experiment and like make weird cool. shit. Like I made a Korean barbecue pulled pork and it is very good.
Dude, that Fuck shit was yeah. so good.
Fuck yeah.
It was really good.
Yum jelly.
What, and what
it,
I will
there
say,
wasn't jelly in it.
No jelly. Never mind. I'm not jelly then.
Oh. I prefer preserves. What I will say though is like, you know, even beyond that, like if you cook a lot of your meals yourself, chances are they're gonna lean healthier just naturally. You know? So you're gonna feel better for it too. You might have to spend a little bit more time, a little bit more effort, but it'll save you money and you'll be healthier ultimately. Because you can control exactly what goes into your food.
It's a win, 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 and another win.
Just add a ton of butter to everything. That's usually.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's how restaurants do it. So obviously you got to add a ton of butter to everything. But unless you're like me and I feel you if you hate going to the grocery store and we can get groceries delivered here. But I know that's not true in every case everywhere.
It sounded so hard, like you were about to go into an ad read, and I got really excited. I thought we were sponsored.
And that's why today's sponsor.
Blue Apron, Freshly, Imperfect Foods. Yeah. No, but it's true. I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't like going to the grocery store, personally. It's just not a thing I like to do. It's just people and frantically trying to look for what you're trying to get. I don't know. It's just the whole experience. I could do without it. I like it sometimes, but for the most part, I don't.
For the old school days where we hunted all our food.
Yeah. Jesus. I would be dead by day two, FYI, if that were still the case. And also, I will leave you with this, dear audience. If you are getting into cooking, buy a sharp knife, a good sharp knife. You don't need to spend a lot of money, just a decent one.
Victorinox
knife
Fiber
is more
Knox.
Dangerous.
Get the Victorinox like $40 knife. That's what you want to start with.
Yeah, you will feel a lot better about going to do prep in your kitchen if you have a sharp knife to actually cut things with, instead of trying to finagle a tomato with a dull knife and hating yourself.
Yeah, you're more likely to hurt yourself with a dull knife than a sharp knife.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right. Well, if that's everything, guys, this has been Everything in Potteration. If you want to get at us. Talk to us about your favorite recipes, your favorite cooking YouTubers, your favorite cooking cookware, cooking. You can email at us, everythinginpod@gmail.com. You can also add us on Twitter, everythinginpod on Twitter as well.
Mm-hmm. And if you're watching us on YouTube, leave a comment down below. Who's your favorite cooking YouTuber that we've mentioned or we haven't? And if I don't see cooking with dog down there, I will be sad.
Oh my gosh. We're going to make a dedicated fan cast to everyone that you mentioned. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, if you do feel so inclined, tell a friend about our show and how bad we are at talking about cooking. Or how bad I am at cooking. What? Robert, you talking shit?
Robert's offended.
I thought Robert was talking shit.
He's not going to talk to you anymore. No. And we're going to have to somehow navigate the podcast people not talking
just
to each other ever.
Wait, we can't. No, it can't be just me and Daly. Who's going to edit the show?
No, I'll be there, but I'm going to just say, hey, Daly, can you tell Colin?
No, I can't.
That's going to add like a third onto our runtime every episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next Thursday.
Wang Jangle.